Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
You're listening to The Dialogue with Diwa de Boer on Reality Check Radio. We discuss politics, power, and culture. You can text us on 2057 or email inbox@realitycheck.radio. We are joined now by Peter Berenger, a member of the Bundestag for the Alternative for Deutschland, the AfD. He is the vice chairman and finance spokesman. I hear he is also a fan of Austrian economist Friedrich von Hayek, who's famous for his book, The Road to Serfdom, of which I'm a fan of also. And it's been almost exactly 1 year since he was on the RCR Breakfast Show with Paul Brennan in September last year. So welcome back to Reality Check Radio.
Thank you, and well, welcome back, yes.
So we've just won two state-level elections this week, and there are some more ahead in which you're polling well. I say won, I mean, you've done very well. You can tell us a little bit about how happy you are with those results. And these are both in the East as well. And so could you tell us a little bit about why you think the message of the AfD is doing very well in the ex-communist East?
Well, starting off with the results, we got close to one third of the election poll. So every third voter almost voted for us in both states, Thuringia and Saxony. Well, it's a little bit easier for us in the East, which has several reasons. The main reason probably is those people have what I call totalitarian experience from the former GDR. Of course, it was something different than what we're experiencing today, and we're not yet at that stage. But people do not believe in the mass media as much as the West Germans do. There really is a cultural difference here, especially when it comes to media reception. And well, this is the main reason. In nowadays, completely lying and framing media, mainstream media in Germany, it is positive not to review the mass media at all. Even if you do not listen to alternative media, even if you do not listen to media at all, you are probably better informed than the Western Germans, especially when it comes to AfD party, because 90% of what is being published about us, and that does not only hold in Germany, that is also true internationally, is false. It's plainly false. That is probably the main reason, the media reason, and the historical experience, which is different in the East and the West. There may be a few other reasons, but that's why we're polling pretty good in the East.
And what were the big issues in this election? Because this is a local election as well. Are they local issues that are propelling you forward in these elections? Or are all of these issues connected? You're doing well because of your stance that you're taking in the national parliament?
Well, in some states in Germany, we have 16 of them. Sometimes local and regional topics do play a role. Here, almost all parties agreed that it was a small federal election, which probably also went in our favor because we are not so famous for our regional politics, because A, we do not yet have a regional government and people there. And secondly, most of our most important topics along which we founded ourselves, EU criticism, immigration, wokeness, the war in the meantime, the CO2 topic, all of that is at least a nationwide topic. In many respects, it is international things.
And on all of these issues, I think the establishment is failing in Germany then. All the main parties you said are sort of agreed on those issues, and you're different, and that's why you're doing so well.
Of course, we have to differentiate a little bit. Our opponent, on paper, our opponents are very different. They vary from the Christian Democrats, which used to be in the long past, a long time ago, as the name says, Christian and very conservative party. And we also are seeing the former Communist Party, which have a direct line to the former Social Unity Party of the GDR, communists, and they still are communists. So not a lot has changed, even though they do not refer to the GDR any longer. But when it comes to central planning, economy and stuff like that, nothing has changed since the 1980s. So this is the span. We also see liberals on paper who are no longer liberals, I must say. And then we have, of course, the classical social democrats, which used to be a workers' party 150 years ago and probably is still 40 years ago, no longer so. Everything has changed here. These parties still are there by name, but they have changed a lot, with the possible exception of the former communists who haven't changed. And yes, in most aspects, not all of them, there are a few exceptions, we are the only ones citing and speaking out about the life lies, as I call them, in many respects, being energy policy, immigration policy, cultural policy, especially the wokeness, which is an international phenomenon, of course. I know you know that too, down under. The war thing, interestingly enough, with at least one of the leftist parties who has still stuck to their pacifist former stance, we do agree to some extent. We're not a pacifist party, but we do not believe that the Ukraine war, and maybe we can go into that a little later, is our war. You can argue who is the aggressor here, and yes, Russia does play a bad role, but it is not so easy. This is not only a Russian war, and it has this war history and pre-war history goes back way below or behind 2022 when the war officially started. But we can go into that later. What else? There's the economic policy. There's, of course, the topic of immigration, which is probably, especially in those two states where we have had the election now, something which horrifies people most. I can, of course, go into detail here too, but yes, in almost all those respects, we are a minority party, but it is a minority which has now gained a third of the seats. So we are no longer a small minority.
And I believe the thing that all of these parties do agree on is keeping you out of government. So Absolutely. The AfD has never been in government. And so with these victories, now that you're the largest party in at least one of these states, Thuringia, I believe, and second largest in Saxony, what can you accomplish with these state-level victories? Can you get policy? Can you be part of government? Or is the story still the same?
Officially, if everything were in order in Germany, if everything were as it has been for decades now, we would have a clear order by the voters to form a government. We are by far the largest party in Thuringia, 33% versus 23%, which is the Christian Democrats. Those two alone, who are closest together ideologically, not close, but closest, could form with 60% of votes almost easily a government. But that is completely out of the question. Nobody even thinks about that. And all the others together, all other parties together, which is four in Thuringia and I think even five in Saxonia, have to, collaborate against us, despite all their internal differences. Of course, there are huge differences between those parties. But obviously, their main objective is to keep us out of business, out of the government, because we were so radical. Everybody says that and has been saying that for more than 12 years in our party history, which is plainly wrong. It is a framing which is completely wrong. It's the only argument, obviously, left against us. Both the media and the other parties use that all the time. And I know that the same is true internationally. It's almost the Third Reich or the Fourth Reich in Germany is invoked by the media, which is absolutely rubbish. It's complete rubbish. Our program is more or less what the Christian Democrats and even the Social Democrats have had 30 years ago. It's not longer than that. We only would like to see some workers' rights, some people's rights, a good economy, of course, a lot less immigration, and a sane economic policy and especially energy policy. Germany is the only country in the world who has abandoned both nuclear power and coal power at the same time, which is almost undoable. And also regarding the war in the Ukraine, which is very costly and, of course, tragic, obviously, and it is not our war. We dare to differ, and people believe in us, despite all that media hysteria against us. It's every third voter voting for us. So it's interesting because people do believe in the media, and one third of them do not even believe in the media, but they vote for us, which is a huge step. And so we're getting ahead, but it's still almost impossible to get into power. We will need 50%. Well, when I last spoke with Paul on your show a year ago, well, on a federal level, we were at 22%. We're still at that level. So we have to gain a little more, but we are not radical. This is really the main message I would like to send to your listeners.
And you said your policies are fairly normal, at least by the standards of a generation ago. But a lot of the criticism that you get from the mainstream media may be around people, like your faction leader in Thuringia, Bjorn Hock. He's been fined for using slogans that are banned in Germany. And so we see this in the international media as well. So how do you respond to these allegations that your people are secretly wanting to take Germany down a dark path again, and even if your policy is normal?
But both nationally and internationally, it's three or four people of our party who are depicted all the time. In this case, it happens to be in the leader of Thuringia, of our party. But obviously, in 15 other regional elections, he's not the leader. He's not even a member of the main board. I'm one of those members, so we have 14 of them. So he is important, but he's not the most important figure in our party. So this is first. Having said that, and he too is not a radical. He's being diabolized.
Demonized.
Demonized, sorry. Thank you. He's demonized all the time by the media. Every word is really turned to the opposite meaning, whatever he says. He's being treated completely unfairly, and I'm not a 100% fan of his, but this is just true. And the demonization here is incredible, absolutely incredible. What can I say? It's hard to prove that to an English-speaking setup, especially when every article you're Googling regarding him, this person, is completely one-sided framing. The fines you mentioned, we have an agency called the Constitution Agency. Officially, they're in order to protect our constitution against people who go against the law by force. But these days, especially against us, and very especially against Bjorn Höcke, they only weigh words and treat warnings, which we speak out all the time, as plans, especially as plans to plot the government and to overthrow democracy and everything. This is all complete rubbish. We are the most democratic party. We never, ever have said anything against democracy. We would never do that. I've been writing all our programs of the party for 10 years now. Nothing is there in there which is undemocratic. But everybody refers to some lapsus linguae, some wrong words, which some people allegedly use. This is not serious at all.
Well, I think I was just thinking, if one third of the people are in his state are voting for him, then maybe that's a good sign that they don't think that he's dangerous or taking them down a dark path, because then you'd have to accuse one third of Germans in that area of being like that. So
this in turn is undemocratic. We have had an interview with the Christian Democrat man and candidate in Thuringia, this very state of Bjorn Höcke's, after the election. And the moderator from the state media seriously asked him the question, well, you, Mr. Blah, Blah, Mr. X, you are now the person who gained the most democratic votes in Thuringia. His party got 23%. We got 33%. So this person, this moderator, implicitly said that 33% of people did not cast a democratic vote, which is a contradiction in itself. Obviously, every vote is automatically a democratic vote. How can it be any different? And he ruled that out, which is a joke. It's completely undemocratic. What we are being accused of, these people do themselves.
And I think one more question on policy, and perhaps we'll get into some of your policies and issues now. And the policy that maybe has got the most debate on social media is your policy on immigration, particularly on repatriation or remigration, sometimes as it's called, of immigrants that you don't want in Germany and trying to encourage refugees to go back home. So what are you proposing on your immigration policy specifically, and what are your voters like about this policy?
Here too, everybody is referring to so-called remigration demands. What we have is immigration demands, and we would like to see a lot less of that. There is an article in the German Constitution, as in probably most constitutions of the world, granting political asylum to politically persecuted persons. And that's about it. I would say about every 1%, maybe even every thousandth person coming into Germany qualifies for asylum under that article. Almost nobody is individually persecuted for political reasons, but that is the main reason our constitution grants the right to asylum. And we never questioned that as a party. It's not a problem. This is not a big deal. It would be 1%, maybe only a tenth of a percent of those people coming in. And we're talking about 500,000 net influx into Germany every year. It's incredible. In the last 10 years, we have seen more than five, some say even 10 million people coming in, and we are some 70, 75 million. So that is a huge change in society, and it is not legal immigration. It is illegal immigration. We do also have a few European Union laws, but other European countries plainly ignored those. And then we have the so-called Geneva Convention, which was in power all the time for decades, and it was never a problem up until 2015, when our former Chancellor Mrs. Merkel, abandoned our borders. She really abandoned the borders. She just gave them up. She invited everybody in, basically, and just compare that to what, for example, Australia did with that very clear message the Australians sent to the world: you will never make Australia home. This is basically what we demand too. It's nothing serious about that. You don't see Nazis in Australia, do you? And we demand the same thing. Just 2 days ago, a Swiss tabloid, the main Swiss tabloid called Blick, they said what AfD in Germany demand is reality politics in Switzerland. It is just normal. And it was normal up until 2015, especially 20 or 30 years ago. What we demand was less than what the Christian Democrats and even the Social Democrats demanded 20 years ago. There is nothing radical about that. Otherwise, we would have had millions and millions of Nazis 20 years ago in Germany.
You can really see that very quick leftward shift, that progressive shift, the mainstream media programming of people just over a very quick space of time. But are you now seeing that turn back, especially with younger voters? And we see this in many countries, and I think in New Zealand as well. And I saw the numbers for the state election in Germany. I think the majority of young people were voting for right-wing parties or anti-immigration parties. Is there going to be a shift back now, you believe, in the next generation? And that the young people really are the future of your party, and that they're going to turn things around, and that you will increase your polling throughout the entire country and get to the levels that you need to be?
Yes, I can confirm that from the numbers we've had, both from the polling institutions and from the election results. The under 25 ages in Thuringia, I think by 38% have voted for my party, even a lot more than in the overall results. And the same for Saxony. And we see that on a federal level too. And I can understand those young people. Some of them are maybe, it's the same phenomenon. A, they do not listen to the mainstream media any longer. And this is a positive thing, because if you do not do that, you are not being brainwashed every day. So you have a clear picture on the world. And secondly, those young people look around themselves. They see, for the first generation in centuries, they do not have the same chances than their parents had. And we almost always, for hundreds of years, have had, with the possible exception of war times, we have seen the younger generation leading a better life than the older ones. And this has changed, and this generation is realizing that. And I cannot even blame them, because it's just true. It's the environment, the social interactions between people has changed in the last 10 years to the worse. People are not so friendly any longer. They do not get along with each other. And this has nothing to do with everybody being xenophobic or something. It is just different cultures that are forcedly being intermingled without people consenting there too quickly. If this happens too quickly, then things become worse and people see it. Economically, chances are going down for that generation for many reasons, but main reason is probably the catastrophic energy policy Germany is pursuing. I've been explaining that in the last interview with you, with yours, as I said, we have abandoned nuclear power and coal power at the same time. And even the gas, especially Russian pipeline gas, has been cut off from ours. There's no real replacement. All replacements are much more expensive. And we are losing our productive capacity. Germany has been an industry powerhouse all over the world. All this is changing currently. So yes, I do believe that politically this does play into our favor and into our cards, but I am not there to just promote and make life better for AfD party, but I went into politics to save Germany, and we are running out of time. So the young generation has right, that they are right voting for us. I really hope that the middle ages come to reality quickly too.
Yes, I hope so too, because in the end, it will be an intergenerational effort. You know, we have to work together. And
if I may say that, it is a European phenomenon, and it's interesting to hear from you that it's an international phenomenon too. The young people need a home, whatever nation that is, but in their home. And if the nations are given up, and that is the worldwide trend, some globalists, and I don't like that word, because I was raised very internationally. Globalism for me is not a bad thing. There are reasons for the world becoming more globalistic, and especially when it comes to economics, it is important to have economies of scale and to have huge production capacities to share the labor internationally. So free trade is important for the welfare of nations, but the complete giving up of national boundaries is not what people want, and I can understand that. So there is no contradiction in promoting free trade, as we do, but not promoting free movement of everybody all over the world, regardless of borders, who somebody decided should no longer exist.
You know, it's the same problem here in New Zealand as well, where young people feel like they don't have a future in New Zealand. They move over to Australia, which is close by. And they can't afford to buy houses because especially immigration levels are very high and restrictions on building and all kinds of other problems. And then the price of everything goes up and young people just feel like they haven't got a home and they haven't got a future here. And we want to avoid that as well in New Zealand, just like you do in Germany. And we have the same problem all over the world. Whenever I talk to patriotic people from every country in the world, it's the same problem. And so it's great at least to see the younger generations seeing the problem and wanting to turn it back. And hopefully everyone gets in on that. Well, speaking of the war in Ukraine as well, you've referred to it a few times. And I was looking at the results in Thuringia and Saxony, and there seemed to be a new faction on the left. The left support seemed to largely have collapsed. And there was a new faction, the BSW. I can't pronounce the name in Germany, but you'll be familiar with who's running that. And it seems like that party is also more so against mass migration, also very much opposed to continuing to fuel the war in Ukraine with Russia, scared about the risk of escalation and going to war with Russia like some of the other parties want. So can you explain what's happening there on the left as well? And is there some synergy that you have?
Yes, it's a good question, because it's really a new phenomenon. The old left, the former SED, Social Unity Party, the former GDR ruling party, which still exists in Germany to this very day, was finished a year ago. They really, they were a very small party. They became a very small party. And then one person from that party called Sarah Wagenknecht, and that is what the S and the W stands for in that abbreviation, which you just mentioned, BSW, Bündnis, so the group of Sarah Wagenknecht. It's really a one-person show, actually, with very, very, very few members. Still, they got 12 or 16% in those two elections after just 9 months after foundation, which is incredible. But there's two reasons, and you mentioned them both. A, allegedly, but just allegedly, they're against mass immigration. That is a myth. It is not true. The voting and all those people had been in parliament in the Deutsche Bundestag before. They never voted against mass immigration, so they have no track record whatsoever. But for some reason, the media and they themselves, do not disagree when you say you are against mass migration. They have not proven that yet, so I'm curious what's going to happen. But yes, that the myth is there. I think what is even more important is really their attitude towards the Ukrainian war. They are against that war. They also are against weapon deliveries from Germany to the Ukraine. We have the same opinion, maybe for slightly different reasons. That lady and her group, Sarah Wagenknecht, she really had been a communist herself. She was already a communist politician before 1989 in the GDR. So there is some friendship with the former Soviet Union, which we do not have. We have nothing against Russia, but we do have something against the Soviets and against socialism. This lady does not have anything against socialism. She is a socialist party. She's still a member of a socialist party. So economically, she really is on the completely wrong path, which is the former GDR path, which obviously will never work. But in the case of the Ukraine war, she is on the right track, maybe for the wrong reasons. But there also is the right perception that this is not purely a Russian war. And as I already indicated a little earlier in this interview, the story of this war and the history of this war goes way behind 2022. It started probably, you can go back a long time in Ukrainian-Russian history, centuries actually, but the country was founded in 1991 as a result of the exploded former Soviet Union. And from the very beginning, they have had ethnical differences between the Ukrainians in the center and the Russian-speaking people, and especially the ethnic Russians in the very east and the south. That was true from the very beginning. Actually, it had been true before 1991, but within the huge agglomerate, atheistic agglomerate of the Soviet Union, nobody bothered. It didn't matter because everybody spoke Russian. Everything was ruled from Moscow. Kiev did not really have a lot to say, but that changed in 1991. And unfortunately, the Kiev people did not treat the Russians very well. They're minority Russians, some 17 or 20% in today's Ukraine. This went okay for a few years, but it really became tense already in 2008. And there was a toppling of the government, which I believe was rightfully elected in 2014. And from then on, they had basically a civil war going on in the country. And one must not forget, there was a military demarcation line within Ukraine already before 2022. So the war was ongoing. The Kiev people bombarded the Russians almost every day. And there were some 14,000 people. So this is a long story going back. I'm not saying that Moscow did not play a role here, a bad role. And obviously in February 2022, Putin invaded Ukraine. That's true, and it was definitely wrong. But what has Europe to do with that? We have nothing to do with that. Actually, it was the US Democrats who played a big role in the Ukraine war. It was not the Europeans, and it was especially not the Germans. So why should it be our war? And this is not a NATO country. It is not an EU country too. So there are no contractual obligations for us to interfere here. And still, Merkel and especially our current Chancellor Scholz, he followed the American orders in this case. I can't put it any differently. And we are paying billions and billions for weapons being sent to the Ukraine. It is an open secret that this war could have ended in early summer 2022. There was a peace contract negotiated between the Ukrainians and the Russians in Istanbul. But the West, in this particular case, Boris Johnson from the UK, interfered and denied Zelensky signing this contract, which would have saved, I'm convinced about that, 1 million lives. 1 million soldiers have died in that incredible war. And yes, Russia does have some part of the guilt here, but it is not only Russia. So we would like to keep Germany out of that war. And yes, Mrs. Wagenknecht comes to the same conclusion. So here we do actually agree.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you want to keep Germany out because you think Germany should come first and that you want to be independent of this. And she has the same view, but because she wants to be friendly with Russia, basically. That's sort of the impression I'm getting.
Right. We are not extremely friendly with Russia, even though sometimes we are called slaves of Putin, whatever the mass media says about us, but it's just not true. But yes, we see it from a German perspective, and there is no economic, no geopolitical, and also no moral reason to support one side in this war. Both sides are guilty to some extent, and they could have come to terms to a peace agreement easily had it not been for the West, and we would not like to be part of that permanent interference which has been going on for at least 20 years now in Ukraine. At least Germany does have different interests. That's our conviction. But obviously, the other parties disagree. And that holds true for the Christian Democrats, too, who, were they in power on a federal level, which they currently are not, would probably be even more hawkish when it comes to that war.
And a question going back to the state elections that you've won and the one that's coming up as well. And I believe you've got a national election perhaps next year or the year after that. But before I ask about that, do you have the power to block certain constitutional votes in Thuringia or perhaps in Saxony? Is there something concrete that you have with your minority status, the large block that you have? Because I've seen some conflicting reports on what exactly you have the ability to block, to stop them. Even if they won't include you in the government, they'll create a government of every single party, sort of a unity government against you, but you still have some power, right? Could you explain how that works?
Yes, you did your homework. You obviously read the reports pretty closely. This is a difficult topic, but obviously there are different thresholds for power. If you have 50%, obviously you can form a government of your own. We don't have that, not even in Thuringia, where we have 33%. Then there's a threshold of 25%, which is also important. You can constitute and demand certain councils investigating political special interest issues, which is interesting. We have that reached that threshold. In some states, we already have had that before. So yes, we have that 25%. We will also have that in the September elections in Brandenburg, which is another state coming on. We are still working on that on a federal level for, let's see what happens in 25. I'm not sure yet. We are now standing at 19, 20%, but we are gaining popularity on a federal level too. So maybe we can get to 25% by end 25. And then there's that one third of votes threshold, or one third of mandates, I should say. We are close to that. Actually, in Thuringia, we have reached it. In Saxony, it's very close. And you can prevent some judges to be nominated if you have the threshold. So it's not a very important threshold, I must say. But the other parties make a big deal of that because for the first time, and they really say it like that. I just heard it today. They have to deal with AfD. Up until today, for 10 years, they did not speak to us. They did not make any deals with us. Now they have to make some deals, at least in those very rare cases when a judge has to be nominated. I think it's not a very powerful position. It's not a very important threshold. But yes, it is there. And at least psychologically, the others make a big deal of that. Personally, I would like to see the 50% threshold because it's only then that we don't have to deal with the others if they don't want to make any compromises with us now.
Well, thank you very much for all of those answers. And that makes some sense to me. Yeah. And I think perhaps a big deal has been made out of it, even though there's very little in it for you. It's almost like every just tiny little shred of influence that you have is enough to drive them crazy. They already
absolutely. That's lost the plot. Exactly how I would put it.
And what are you hoping for in the election campaign going forward? It's another year and a half away. Then, do you see things continuing to go in your favor? Do you see risks ahead? What's your hope for the next year and a half? And is there anything?
Everything we have been doing, everything I have been doing in my whole political life is rational, is not radical in any way. It's just normal politics. It's common sense politics, which we're doing. I'm absolutely convinced of that. And if people looked into our politics and maybe neglected some wrong rhetoric of some people, then they would see it too. So our main problem is the media, which does not convey those facts. They just do not transmit that. Obviously, you are an exception now, but probably our results are not too much being influenced from New Zealand. So thank you for that interview, but we need more of that. We need the German media on our side. We have the alternative media to some extent, and our election results correlate a lot with the alternative media if they are not censored. And this is the current step. The alternative media are being censored. It is an international thing. We know that Facebook is doing shadow banning all the time, the same for YouTube. And the X platform from Elon Musk used to censor. Elon Musk now is censoring less. And now we have just seen the arrest of Pavel Durov, the chief of the Telegram platform, which is a real warning shot from the establishment against the alternative platforms. Okay, he was released now, but he is still held hostage in France. So there are dangerous developments to free speech. We do rely with our politics on free speech and unframed speech and unframed expressions of our opinions. If we achieve that, and it's a very hard way, very hard to do that in Germany, then 50% of people would vote for us. Our votes correlate almost 100% with the people watching alternative media, or at least not watch the mainstream media. That would be helpful. But the main dinosaur in German mainstream media is the directly state-funded or almost directly state-funded monopolist who receives 9 billion directly from the people. And people are obliged to pay to these platforms like the German first and second program of TV. And were it not for them, we would already be way beyond 40%. I'm absolutely convinced about that. It's all a question of messaging.
Yes. So every AfD voter has to pay for propaganda against them. So you're paying for them to attack you, basically. And we have a similar situation in New Zealand with state media as well. And it's a big problem because you're not just fighting somebody else's money. You're basically, they're taking your money and fighting you with it. And it's perverse,
but it's the same in many countries I know.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for joining me. Thank you very much for your time. And I hope all goes well and that you'll be back on the show at some point in the future with more good news.
Thank you for having me and all the best to Down Under.
Thanks for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. Do you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to? Either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We'd love to hear from you, so connect with us today.